The futility of speculation is good news for the investor. It means that prices for public securities are fair, and that differences in average portfolio returns are explained by differences in average risk. Well, it's certainly possible to outperform markets, but not without accepting increased risk. When you reject costly speculation and guesswork, investing becomes a matter of identifying the risks that bear compensation and choosing how much of these risks to take. Financial science identifies the sources of investment returns. Index Funds Advisors, using dimensional funds, provides the tools and experience to achieve them. Bad Money Machine. Show 77. First week of September. Hello, everyone. This is Paul Douglas Boyer. Welcome back to the Mad Money Machine. A couple of days late because we were really busy during the Labor Day weekend with lots and lots of soccer activities, and school didn't start for us until Wednesday after Labor Day. So here's Show 77. Coming up on the Mad Money Machine Show 77, I'll talk about a nameless presidential candidate that sold their stock. I'll talk about David Beckham being out for the season. I'll talk about the new Barron's 400 Index. I'll have a tool to help you figure out how much money you'll save by switching service providers. We'll talk about history, which is part of step 9. I'll talk about the iPhone, the iPod Touch, and Apple's new products. And I'll talk about it takes two to do the tax loss tango. Okay, to start out, a few weeks back in Wall Street Journal, there was an editorial piece that talked about one of the presidential candidates sold their stock, I guess to avoid any sort of conflicts of interest. And what did they do with their money? They put it basically into money market funds. And this is not a political show at all. And so I won't reveal the name of the presidential candidate, just so that I don't try to act political. But this presidential candidate sold all her stock and put it into money market funds. What she should have done is bought the Vanguard Total U.S. Stock Market Fund. That would have avoided any conflict of interest with any particular stock company like Exxon or Walmart, and put their faith in United States capitalism. What a better testament than that if you're running for president. Manchester United's manager, Sir Alex Ferguson, has claimed that David Beckham's mission to transform the United States into a nation of football lovers is doomed to failure. Ferguson believes that Beckham alone cannot transform the league's fortunes. He says that David Beckham himself can't change the whole country. And of course, now that Beckham is injured, his impact on the sport is going to be lessened in 2007. I happened to watch that game against Pachuca for the Superliga final, LA Galaxy versus Pachuca, a Mexican team. And some of the papers wrongly claimed that Beckham was tackled and injured. What in fact happened is he and the player on the opposing team went for the ball at the same time. They both hit it with their right leg at exactly the same time. The other guy had a little bit more of advantage on the ball, and Beckham's leg went backwards, or sideways rather, and he immediately fell to the ground and waved to be taken out because he was in fact injured. Pulled a ligament in his knee, supposed to be out for about 6 weeks, which basically takes him out for the rest of the season. What he's really hurting about, though, is his inability then to play for the England team, representing them in the European matches. Well, Apple announced their new products yesterday. Many of the predictions came true. The fact that they have now the iPod Touch, which is the iPhone without the phone. It also lacks a couple of other things that are important, though. It lacks a microphone and it lacks a speaker. A lot of people are talking about, with the Wi-Fi capability in this iPod Touch, wouldn't it be great to be able to use this thing for Skype calls? Well, we'll see if anybody's enterprising enough to get that working on an iPod Touch. You'd have to add a microphone into the docking port, Another thing I would like to see on the iPod Touch, since it's got all this other calculators and things, is a password locker. You know, where you enter a you enter one password to get at all of your other passwords for your websites and things. Now, I know that on Macintoshes, they have this website, OnePassword, onepassword.com, which looks like a pretty successful product. I'm not sure how actually secure it is from hackers getting at all of your passwords in one place, but it sure looks like a convenience, and it would be something nice to have on the iPod Touch. Barron's Magazine came out last weekend with something new. They have the Barron's 400 Index. And I want to talk about this just a little bit to try to figure out whether I like it or not. And what it is it's basically a quantitative index, so to speak, where they look at a number of characteristics about stocks, and they do this every 6 months to pick the 400 best stocks out of the 5,000 that are available in the Dow Jones Wilshire 5,000. They use a site called MarketGrader to analyze stocks for their fundamental strength and growth, value, profitability, and cash flow. They try to look at surprise earnings records, revenue growth rate, short and long-term sales and earnings growth rates, and blah, 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 blah. So they rank all of the stocks, they sort them out, they apply certain rules. They don't let any particular sector of stocks have more than, say, a 20% weighting in the fund. And they come up with, every 6 months, they come up with the 400 best stocks to make up this index. And what they claim is that in the past 10 years, this has significantly outperformed the S&P 500, the Dow Jones Wilshire 5000, the NASDAQ Composite. And I've actually done a comparison between it and the index folio, the IFA Index Folio 100. And it looks like an identical chart almost over that time period. What I wonder, though, going back to the beginning of this show, is there more risk associated with the Barron's 400? In other words, is it more volatile? Does it have a higher standard deviation in its pricing over that time period? Well, Barron's, of course, says in their article that our sister unit, Dow Jones Indexes, would like eventually to license the B400 as the basis for an exchange-traded fund and other financial products. Oh, isn't that easy money now? You write a computer program to pick stocks, and then you license that out to somebody else to make an index fund out. I can imagine somebody like PowerShares or perhaps iShares, probably not Vanguard, to license this out. I would imagine they would have an expense ratio of at least 0.5%. And, I mean, the nice thing about this index is that it is split among various capitalizations. It's about 34% large cap, 19% mid cap, 40% small cap, and even 7% micro cap. And it's spread across a number of industries. What it's not spread across, of course, is countries. It is a U.S.-only index at this point. It does not include any REITs. And so in my mind, I like the Index Folio 100 better because it includes all the international emerging market REITs as well as the various capitalizations. So we'll have to wait and see if any ETF company comes up and licenses this Barron's 400 index and creates an exchange-traded fund out of it and try to evaluate it at that point, see what happens with it. Let's open up the tool crib. For internet, we have Verizon Fios, the fiber optic service to our home. For cable TV, however, we've had Comcast, which was formerly Adelphia. Well, the other day, my doorbell rang, and it was a person selling more services for Verizon. And usually I'm very leery of door-to-door salespeople. And the person wanted to sign me up on the spot for the Verizon Fios TV service and long-distance telephone service. And I said, I do not want to sign up at the moment, but I'm going to research this. And it actually turns out that by bundling everything together, one more thing that I get is a Replay TV service, which is like a TiVo subscription. Well, with Verizon Fios TV, I also get their HD TV recorder, which will replace my Replay TV service. I was paying $206 a month for the TV, the long distance, the replay guide, and the Verizon internet and local phone. And he has claimed to me that Instead of $206, I'll be able to pay just $142. That is about $60 a month that I'll save, plus get free long distance and the ability to record high-definition TV instead of just regular TV. So I'm looking forward to when this gets installed in a couple of weeks. Well, the tool in the crib, though, this time is, over a 10-year period, how much will saving $60 a month equal if I invested in stocks at 12%? And for that, we go to fincalc.com. We click on Consumer Calcs. We go down on the right-hand side, and under the Savings area, we click on What Will My Savings Grow To? What will my current savings grow to? We enter an initial balance. Let's just say that we start the first year at $600. We annually save $600 instead of the $720, which would actually turn out to be. Let's go over 10 years in the analysis. And let's just say 12% and a tax bracket of zero. Press submit. And after 10 years, I should have over $13,000 in my pocket. Well, of course, no one can predict what's going to happen in 1 year or 5 years, much less 10 years, right? After 5 years, who knows, maybe you won't need to have cable TV. You'll get all your TV through the internet, and I can do away with that part of the bill altogether. And you might be able to do away with long distance service too, through the internet. But I'm just happy to be able to save $60 going forward. And I'd like to be able to save another $60 on top of that soon. Well, that's our tool in the crib this time. FinCalc. The next time you save money, you can figure out what the impact of that will be in the long term. And like every tool I've given you so far, this one's free. Mozzie wrote a comment in the show notes for a previous show. It says, I live in Adelaide, Australia, and have enjoyed your show very much since almost the very beginning. Always looking forward to your next installment. I've got a question for you. It's pretty clear to me how you should invest in the long term. But what about the shorter term? I'm fairly heavily invested in the share market, investing in capitalism. I still have too many years to retirement, but eventually it will appear on the horizon. What do I do then? I want to make sure I can keep my lifestyle without being too dependent on the fluctuations in the markets. I guess one approach would be to move investments to less volatile ones, but is there a best way to go about it? Another similar scenario, if I plan to put my money in a house in a couple of years, what do you think is the best way to ensure you don't suffer down the track by a low in the market when you need the money? Keep up the good work. Well, there's a very simple answer to this, Mozzie. And that is take the risk capacity survey. I know this is getting repetitious, but in fact, the risk capacity survey at IFA.com takes this into consideration. It asks you questions like, when will you need the money? How many years do you have to go until your retirement? How many years of income do you expect to have? And by crunching all those numbers together, it will give you a recommended portfolio. Now, here's what happens. In a situation where you do need money either soon or you're going to run out of income-generating opportunities, it's going to weight you more heavily towards bonds because those bonds, that provides the cushion against volatility in your portfolio. And that's the simple answer to the question. September being the ninth month, is History Month in the 12-step program for active investors. By the way, we did give away that book last time to Book Lover, who wrote in and claimed the prize. Congratulations to you. Step 9 is History. When you know the stock's history, it'll enable you to know how to allocate indexes in accordance with your personal risk capacity. Sir John Templeton said, "The four most dangerous words in investing are, it's different this time." Master Po on the Kung Fu TV series said, "If a man dwells on the past, then he robs the present. But if a man ignores the past, he may rob the future. The seeds of our destiny are nurtured
by the roots of our past.
And then, of course, snatched the pebble from my hand. And Harry S. Truman said, "The only thing new in the world is the history you don't know." There are several different historical databases that are used to study the market. The premier source of historical stock market data used by the academic community is the Center for Research in Security Prices, CRSP. A lot of people say CRISP when they refer to that acronym, which is housed at the University of Chicago Graduate School of Business, and it was established in 1960 with the goal of building and maintaining historical databases for stock indexes such as NASDAQ, Amex, and New York Stock Exchange, and mutual fund securities. Initially, it was formed to accurately measure the returns from investing in common stocks listed on the New York Stock Exchange from the period of 1926 to 1960. It took them 4 years to complete that initial study. The data that's housed there is used extensively for financial, economic, and accounting research. Eugene Fama, who is one of the respected professors of finance at the Graduate School of Business and is a director of research at Dimensional Fund Advisors, is the chairman of the CRISP. And DFA, they base several of their investment products on Eugene Fama's findings from the database. The University of Chicago, in the Journal of Business, did a study of stock market returns, and they showed that if an investor put $1,000 in the stock market in 1926, and they reinvested all the dividends, paid no taxes, and remained fully invested until the end of the year 1960, they would have accumulated $30,000, or a gain of about 9% per year. And just remember, that period of time includes the Great Depression. And of course, the CRISP database has been kept updated all these years. And one of the things that academics have found by looking at data in this database is that they believe that small company stocks, small cap stocks, in the long run, perform better than large company stocks. And they believe that something called value stocks perform better than growth stocks. They determine whether a stock is a value stock by looking at its book-to-market ratio. The book value of a company is just an accounting term for its net worth, its assets minus its liabilities. The market value of a company, of course, is its price per share times the number of shares outstanding. And so the book-to-market factor, and basically you'd look for something with a high book-to-market ratio, a high value of the company divided by a low market price for the company. That's a value stock. And if you look at Chapter 9 in the book or in the ebook or online, you can see a lot of different charts that show you the historical returns of 16 different indexes for each and every year since 1927. You can see the returns of various classes of assets, emerging markets or art or real estate. And you can see a relative performance of large versus small versus international versus emerging market. And there's a big table, table 9-4, which is the annualized rates of return of Fama French, IFA, and other indices. Once you figure out that you can get a relatively high return for a relatively low amount of risk, you'll realize that you don't want to do anything other than invest in index funds. So I'm thinking it takes two to do the tax loss tango. And if you are just setting out to invest, you're putting money into the markets. And one of the neat things that can happen early on is if the stock market goes down in the near term, that you could actually take your losses and help offset any capital gains that you may have on other investments. But one of the neat things they might look at doing is to find two of each exchange-traded fund or mutual fund that are virtually identical that you can swap back and forth into and out of. So that, for example, if you invest in the Vanguard Index 500 fund and it goes down, let's say 5%, well, you can sell it and get into the iShares Index 500 fund. And again, I'm not a tax advisor or accountant or lawyer. And from what I have heard, it's okay to take a tax loss as long as the ticker symbol is different Now, whether the IRS agrees with that or not, I don't know exactly. It's worth looking into. But wouldn't it be great if for each category of stocks, large cap, small cap, micro cap, REITs, international, emerging markets, you could identify two virtually identical funds that you can play this tax loss tango with. Back to school time means writing an essay called What I Did on My Summer Vacation. And for a lot of us who go to the beach, one of the things that we like to do is read books. One of the books I read this summer, picked up at Costco. It's a little book called Plato and a Platypus Walk into a Bar, Understanding Philosophy Through Jokes. And it goes, the chapters are entitled Metaphysics, Logic, Epistemology, Ethics, Philosophy of Religion, Existentialism, and so on. Under Metaphysics, in talking about the philosophical concept of relativity, they write, a woman is told by her doctor that she has 6 months to live. Is there anything I can do? She asks. Yes, there is, the doctor replies. You could marry a tax accountant. How will that help my illness? The woman asks. Oh, it won't help your illness, says the doctor, but it will make that 6 months seem like an eternity. Under rationalism, they write, the optimist says, the glass is half full. The pessimist says, the glass is half empty. The rationalist says, the glass is twice as big as it needs to be. And they talk about ethics. There's something called Platonic virtue. The prime virtue is wisdom, which Plato defined as understanding the idea of the good. However, one man's good is another man's goodies. At a meeting of the college faculty, an angel suddenly appears and tells the head of the philosophy department, I will grant you whichever of three blessings you choose, wisdom, beauty, or $10 million. Immediately, the professor chooses wisdom. There's a flash of lightning, and the professor appears transformed, but he just sits there, staring down at the table. One of the colleagues whispers, say something. The professor says, I should have taken the money. I want to thank you so very much for downloading the Mad Money Machine and listening to it. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes less rock, more talk to make a Mad Money Machine, at least for this show. I hope you'll go out to madmoneymachine.com and click around and see what you can see. I also hope that you'll go to Index Funds Advisors at ifa.com and read their articles there, take their risk capacity survey, benchmark your portfolio, check out the various portfolios from 5 to 100. I hope that you wish you will email me at feedback@madmoneymachine.com or call me at 206-734-4763 and leave a voicemail message. Some music on this program, the limited amount that there was on this show, was provided by music.podshow.com. I'll see you next week.